artificial intelligence is reshaping the world as we know it, and the impact on the property sector will be profound. So what exactly can landlords and occupiers expect in the coming decade? I'm your Talking Property podcast host, Catherine House. And to find out what's in the wings, I'm joined by CBRE's Head of Office Research, Tom Broderick, who recently completed a thought-provoking report on the likely impact of AI on Australia's office sector.
The theory is that AI is going to make us far more productive. And so if companies are seeing huge amounts of productivity benefits from generative AI, then maybe they will embrace the four-day week.
Thanks, Tom, for joining today.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm also joined by Julian Kesselman, the Innovation Director for Taronga Ventures, a company that invests globally in real assets, innovation and technology to drive change in the built environment.
It's such a dynamic space. The models are changing all the time, and the actual applications that we're going to see in real estate making the biggest impact are only starting to emerge.
Julian, great to have you on Talking Property.
Great to be here, Catherine. Thanks for the invitation.
So AI is a fascinating topic to dig into. This year, the Property Council of Australia's CEO, Mike Zorbas, noted that the AI genie was well and truly out of the bottle and that it would transform the property sector for the better. In a recent survey with Yardi, the Property Council noted that the global AI market size was valued at US $196.63 billion in 2023 and projected to expand at a compound annual growth rate of 37.3% between now and 2030. So I think most of us have delved into applications like ChatGPT, which sparked a global frenzy last year. And recent research by Forbes showed that the most popular use cases for AI at the moment are to respond to messages, answer financial questions, plan travel itineraries, and craft social media posts. But if we look at AI's potential with a wider lens, Tom, you made some predictions in your recent report, including the fact that AI will accelerate the rollout of smart office buildings. And Julian, through Taronga's RealTechX growth program, you're working with real estate technology entrepreneurs to implement some effective go-to-market AI strategies for the wider property industry. Perhaps could you talk us through a few real-life examples of the technologies these startup companies are working on?
Happy to, Catherine. So we probably have a few examples that would speak directly to how AI is impacting smart buildings, and I'm happy to share those with you. So the first is an Australian company, which we've supported from the R&D phase right through to recent commercialization, called Calumino. And they've invented an entirely new type of thermal sensing chip. So a little bit different to the passive infrared sensors that you see in most tenancies. This is a much higher grade chip that provides military grade thermal imaging around the cost of a passive infrared sensor. And what they're using AI to do is to actually interpret the thermal sensing data in a space to say how many people have come out, how many people have left, and what is the density of people remaining, and then ultimately using that information to be able to dial up or dial down lights or HVAC, thereby improving operations. So that's one example at a tenancy level, and maybe another example I can talk to at a building level is a company we invested into a few years ago called Wint Intelligence. And Wint provides water monitoring using a very narrow form of AI where they actually listen to the pipes in a building. And after about a month of training data, they can say what is normal utilization for the building and what is abnormal. And when they hear a hissing sound or a gushing sound, they'll know that there's a burst pipe somewhere in the building, and they actually use the AI to determine exactly where that is. So you can send out FM teams to cut off that water flow before there's too much damage done. So a very real and immediate building and tenant impact, and also quite a good ESG outcome for that one too.
So are many property management and facility management teams starting to use this type of technology?
Well, certainly. I think the key with these kinds of technologies is to keep people away from the complexities of AI. All of that's really embedded within the product. And so what they actually get at the end is just a signal of what they need to do. There's a leak on level 17 on the west side of the building. This is where you've got to attend to it. AI, I think, can be quite overwhelming for people of all different industries. And what we trust our entrepreneurs to do is to embed it into the product such that it fades into the background as a piece of the technology. And all they're really focused on is what is the customer outcome.
Yeah. So in terms of other applications, Tom, your report talks about the fact that AI will revolutionize office design. What can we expect?
Yeah, I think one of the surprises of generative AI is that it's actually quite creative. It can create images almost instantly, and that can be applied to design and particularly workplace design. CBRE is already rolling this out globally with our CBRE Plans platform. So I think in the future, you could think about a tenant who's deciding where they want to occupy in the future. They might choose a building in their shortlist, choose a floor, and then the AI can generate a design for them basically instantly. They can go into the 3D image of that design and basically decide whether they like it almost instantly. So that'll be a real game changer for workplace strategy, I think. Tenants will be able to go through different scenarios within one session. They won't have to go back to the architect. And so that'll improve the efficiency of decision making, I think.
What does that mean for the architects?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the architects will still absolutely have a place because they will have the intel of what other clients have done and what works. The AI will be able to provide the basic template, but then the architect will be more of an advisor around what works and what doesn't work.
So I guess another thing that people are really focused on is where can this deliver cost savings, particularly landlords who are looking at, well, why should I be looking at AI seriously? Tom, you also made a few interesting observations in your report about how AI can lower outgoings in the future. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so obviously AI is accelerating the automation of different tasks. So a good example is around robotic vacuum cleaners, which any consumer can buy one of them for their house now. And already landlords in the office space are rolling them out in common areas. Just for some context, on average, 15% of outgoings in a prime CBD office building in Australia is spent on common area cleaning and maintenance. So I think this automation could reduce the cost of that. And then the other aspect is the benefit to the tenant who also pays for cleaning of their own space, their fit out. And so for the larger tenants, that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars per year. So I think we could see savings both on the landlord and the tenant side.
And Julian, are you seeing anything with the entrepreneurs that you're working with in this area when it comes to cost savings or workplace design?
Yeah, I mean, robotics is a really interesting example. So we've invested into a security robot out of Singapore called Kabam Robotics.
Kabam.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a strong name. They are able to basically patrol an asset 24/7. So they'll link into access control, they'll link into lifts, and they'll just take themselves around the asset, noting any security issues or even things like FM issues. So if there's a spill or a light that's out. So, you know, I think that's a really interesting application in all general commercial assets. And then we're seeing even more targeted applications in places like healthcare. So there are amazing robots that are doing actual surgeries, but I'm thinking at an asset level, there's robotics that are helping deliver bed sheets and deliver medicines around a hospital, right? So all of those kind of lower grade operational tasks that would actually now free up admin and nursing staff to do, you know, the higher value stuff, which is looking after patients.
And what about technology infrastructure? Will companies need to invest in, you know, top tier technology to fully capitalize on AI's potential, Tom?
Yeah, so I think as we all know, AI uses an incredible amount of data, and that's why there's so much investment into data centers at the moment. And access to fast connectivity is going to be really important in the future. So there's something called a WiredScore certification that assesses digital connectivity of buildings, similar to how NABERS measures sustainability credentials of buildings. I would say right now, wide scores are probably not that high on the criteria list when tenants are looking at their future office space. But I think that could change with the rollout of AI. It'll become more and more important. And the other aspect is around inside a tenant's fit-out costs across the country have increased significantly off the back of high construction costs, but also they've increased because tenants are spending a lot more on tech infrastructure. Part of that is that we're all having a lot more Zoom meetings than we were pre-COVID. So all of that kind of technology needs to be built into the fit-out. But I also think that with the adoption of more AI within companies, that they'll probably have to spend more on that tech infrastructure.
What are you seeing in that space, Julian?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And some of that infrastructure is actually just around their own data management. So if you really want to make the most of AI, you've got to make sure that your data within your organization is clean, it's accessible. And by opening that up, you not only get the benefits of generative AI, but that's actually applied to your own proprietary data and really tailored to your organization. And so I think that that's where a lot of the investment will be, in addition to the hardware investment, is actually in data structuring and data organization to prepare for this oncoming wave.
Because I think that's really where some of the greatest potential is in how you can use data better.
Hugely so. And I think a lot of that historically has been trapped in different silos around the organization. And I think AI has given organizations an opportunity to really rethink, well, what is the inherent value in all of this data that's trapped across our servers? And how do we see what the potential to unlock that is with AI?
I think that's one of the really exciting things for CBRE, because we have such a big global business, such a big platform, and so much data. So if we can really effectively use that harnessing AI, I think it's going to be a really exciting step forward.
Absolutely.
So, Julian, do you think Australian property companies are taking it a little slow when it comes to embracing AI? I was looking at that Property Council Yardi survey I mentioned earlier, and it noted that while around a third of Australia's real estate professionals think artificial intelligence will have a revolutionary impact on the industry, the same number, again, have not taken any steps to implement AI. And indeed, Yardi's Bernie Devine said the data suggested Australia's real estate industry is concerned that it's trailing rather than trailblazing with technology. What are your thoughts?
Look, I think the Australian real estate sector is approaching AI at about the same pace that it's approached other technology waves in the past. It's certainly not leading by global standards, but I don't think it's trailing by too much either. I mean, I think what's important is having a genuine commitment to exploring the value to be unlocked within AI. And it's such a dynamic space. The models are changing all the time. And the actual applications that we're going to see in real estate making the biggest impact are only starting to emerge. So what I think is important is having a culture of innovation where you're consistently trialing new technologies, and that there's a leadership commitment to seeing, well, how does this actually augment and add value to our core strategy? That you're giving people throughout the organization an opportunity to just play with these AI technologies and see, you know, what use cases they can apply it to. And then, you know, as I spoke about before, for the CIOs and CTOs to get the house in order from a data perspective to maximize the value that can be extracted. So while Australia is probably going moderately slow and kind of in keeping with the general culture of technology adoption, I don't think that's such a bad thing. I think what's going to be important in this is not a race to the end, but just maintaining momentum over time and building up your capability as you go.
Yeah. So, Tom, did you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think the only point that I would make is that the AI rollout seems to be very capital intensive. And so I feel like the big players are going to be at the forefront of it. And domestically, while we think we're big, I think our property funds and fund managers are relatively small compared to our global peers. So, for example, Blackstone has $1 trillion of assets under management. Australian domestic funds are probably less than 10% of that. So I think that we'll probably, in some cases, piggyback off the big players and the tech that's coming from them. But then, as to Julian's point, some of this technology, the AI is just embedded in the end product. So with that Yardi survey, some of these respondents may be using AI and not knowing it.
Yeah, true. It's interesting, though, that when you look at it and look at other countries, I think one of the things in that survey was about our Asian neighbours, and particularly India, where something like 67% of respondents to a similar survey said they expect radical change. So it will be interesting to see how we progress vis-a-vis our neighbours in Asia.
Yeah. I mean, maybe to talk to India just briefly, they are a very technology-led economy, and so they've done a lot of the business process outsourcing, which, you know, major corporates in the West have done historically. And that was one of the first sectors that people thought there was going to be significant change, just because it's all very repeated tasks, data entry, data cleansing and standardization. And so I can see why India might think that, you know, the AI wave is going to impact them in a kind of outsized way.
And it seems too that people are still keeping their cards very close to their chest. When I was trying to do some research ahead of this podcast, trying to find out what some of the, you know, bigger Australian property companies are doing is still a little difficult. I don't think anyone wants to kind of lift the lid yet. I don't know if you found that when you were putting the report together, Tom.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case, Catherine.
So we'll just have to wait and see. So much of the debate around AI has centered on how it could eliminate current roles. We've sort of touched on this already, but what are your thoughts on that front, Tom?
Yeah, I think this question's really important for investors and existing landlords of office buildings. What is the future demand of office space, and whether there'll be this big drop in white-collar employment as a result of the rollout in AI? Did a fair bit of reading about this for the report. No one really knows the answer to it. It's pretty hard to predict. MIT did a really good survey in the US where they interviewed a number of academics and business leaders around the US. And basically the feedback that they got was that the fears of mass job losses were largely exaggerated. I think the feedback was that there will certainly be some job losses in some industries, but there'll be jobs created elsewhere as a result of the rollout of AI. And so for the report, we had a look at the history of white-collar employment in Australia and how technological milestones have kind of impacted it. And really, it doesn't look like there's been any impact. And I think a good period to look back at was the 1980s, which was really the widespread adoption of personal computers. Think how much that changed kind of white-collar employment during that decade. But when you look at the numbers, there was just steady growth in white-collar employment in Australia during that period. So certainly it would have impacted on secretarial and clerical work, but there was jobs created still in other parts of the economy and white-collar economy. So my guess is that it's not going to have a huge impact in the overall white-collar employment numbers. There will be some industries that will be more impacted than others.
What are your views, Julian?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Tom. I think there's going to be a lot of variance, and that depends on industry, that depends on corporate culture as well, how people want to run their organizations. I mean, I actually think there's, you know, quite a few parallels with what's going to happen in terms of the workforce impacts on AI with COVID and how we've seen shifts with, you know, working from home. It's basically good bandwidth and video conferencing that's opened up that opportunity. And, you know, we're still wrangling with that debate in terms of the return to work and how that's all going to play out, right? And that's only a couple of years post-pandemic. So I think some of these influences will also stack on top of each other. But, you know, ultimately, it's going to come down to how major tenants want to run their organization and, you know, how much they want technology to play a role and how much they value their human capital. And that's going to be, you know, I think a core part of corporate strategy going forwards. And those decisions are going to have interesting effects on the office market.
Mm. I think it's that whole ability, and you mentioned it before with hospitals, it's that freeing up of time to do higher value work where I think there's that great opportunity. And I know we're using it in our team at CBRE for some of our really lower level press releases. We're using AI to create those so that we can focus on, you know, the more interesting thought leadership.
Catherine, I think the other interesting part of this conversation is around graduate level employees, because AI seems to be kind of replacing some of the tasks that they would historically do right at the start of their career. And that's how they kind of learnt the ropes. that's something that businesses are really going to have to think about, is how do you onboard these kind of new entrants to your industry? And I don't think anyone knows the answer to that, particularly in sectors like the legal sector, where junior lawyers would be doing the research that AI can now do almost instantly.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a challenge, because you do need that grounding when you're moving into a corporate role. And how will you get that if AI is doing it for you? We'll have to wait and see on that front. So something that might cause a little bit of debate whenever we talk about, you know, working from home, etc. Does AI have the potential to shorten our working week, do you think, Tom? And I know you did dabble in this in the report, given how productive we're going to be with the help of our new AI digital colleagues. What do you think? Is it going to be a four-day week sometime soon?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I'd just like to point out the disclaimer that I didn't get any kind of commitment from CBRE leadership when I wrote this into the report.
So am I going to get you into trouble now?
Just in case our CEO is listening to this, Catherine. But look, this is already something that companies in Australia are looking at. Medibank is a high-profile example of it. And that's not really AI-related, I don't think, Medibank's decision. It's more about work-life balance and kind of measuring whether productivity is maintained by going to a four-day week. But the theory is that AI is going to make us far more productive. And so if companies are seeing huge amounts of productivity benefits from generative AI, then maybe they will embrace the four-day week. And then the question for the office sector comes about what impact does that have on office occupancy? And I don't think it would change drastically what the numbers we're already seeing. Generally, we're seeing Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays are pretty healthy occupancy-wise, and Mondays and Fridays are the ones where people are working from home. So I would say that those days would continue to be kind of lower if more companies embrace the four-day week.
What do you think, Julian? Four-day week?
Four-day week sounds good. You know, I think it comes down to culture again, you know. So there are some organizations, you mentioned Medibank Private, their values are around health and lifestyle and well-being. Other organizations are going to want to get 120% out of their staff on a five-day week. So I think it will free up 20 to 30% of capacity in a lot of professional services jobs for sure. And it's just, what do we do with that additional capacity? Do we just put it into growth and, you know, doing a better job at serving our customers and, you know, building better organizations? Or do we create more work-life balance for our employees? And I think that that's going to be very individual for different organizations.
Mm. But Ian, you also noted in the report, Tom, that it could actually bring more people into the office potentially if we're starting to use, you know, driverless car technology. There's less traffic congestion because we're, you know, harnessing AI to stop that and, you know, potentially reduce commute time. So could it actually bring more people into the office?
Yeah, well, if anyone's read our occupier survey over the past few years, that is the number one reason why people don't want to come into the office is commute times. And the theory around driverless cars, which AI, I think, is accelerating. I mean, driverless cars seems to be this thing that's coming in the medium term. We've been talking about it for a decade. I think it's still coming in the medium term. But the theory is that it's going to make traffic more efficient. And so that could reduce commute times. And we won't have to maybe wait for a bus for 20 minutes as well. And so that may drive higher occupancy. Again, this is kind of a speculative long-term kind of prediction that I've made. That
it's the crystal ball gazing. We all need to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing. So maybe now a bit of a big question to finish with, and I'm going to direct this at you, Julian, so I hope you don't mind. What do companies need to consider, do you think, if they want to be disruptors when it comes to AI rather than being disrupted?
Yeah, I think it's all about mindset. So either we're fearful and we sit back and we wait for the wave to hit us, meaning, you know, competitors or other new disruptors are coming in and really challenging how we've done things historically, or we lean into a wave which is undoubtedly here. It's undoubtedly going to be transformative. And the way in which, you know, we approach that with confidence and, you know, a mindset of this is not a threat per se, but it's actually an opportunity to be seized. I think that's going to be the major differentiator with how this impacts different organizations.
Well, thanks so much, both of you, for joining today. Really great to get your insights, Julian, and really looking forward to seeing some of the technology that's going to be coming out of those startup companies that you're working with. And great to have you back on Talking Property, Tom. I love a little bit of crystal ball gazing, and I really enjoyed your AI report. So to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And if you'd like to read CBRE's AI Impact on Office report, you can find the link in our show notes. As always, we'd also love it if you could rate or review Talking Property to help spread the word. And if you have any questions or feedback about this episode, you can drop me a note at any time via talkingproperty@cbre.com. Until next time.